Imagine a day when you can work if you want to work or cut back if you want to cut back. Imagine a day where your spouse can tell you like, oh my God, you look so much more relaxed, less stressful, like less stressed. Your shoulders are kind of lower and there's less tension. Imagine a day when you have that freedom. And that's really what real estate investing can do for you. It gives you that space to breathe and not have the financial stress on top of it. And really, the sooner you start, the better, the easier it gets, and the faster you get there.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor.
Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. Our guest today was exceptional. This has just been such an incredible opportunity for me to talk with incredible physicians and medical professionals who have reached financial freedom, who have really realized the potential of real estate to practice medicine and live life how they want. And our guest today is no different. Dr. Rani Shalev is a board-certified physician. She was an ER doc for 16 years and unfortunately suffered some pretty significant burnout that led to her getting fed up with the healthcare system and pivoting into real estate. And boy, was this an incredible decision for her. She now has built a real estate portfolio of over 5,100 units with $184 million in assets under management. She's been featured in Yahoo Finance, Business Insider, Market Watch, The American Reporter, been on numerous podcasts, and she's a best-selling author. Guys, what an incredible opportunity, and this was a fantastic episode. If you gained something from this, do us a favor. Like, subscribe, share this podcast with someone you think would benefit from it, because as physicians, we all deserve the freedom to practice medicine and live life how we want. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Physicians and Properties. Today, we have another incredible guest. Dr. Rani Shalev is here with us today. It's going to be a great episode. Rani, how are you doing?
Hey, Alex. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, happy to have you here. And thanks for calling in and from hot Texas right now. So I hope you're staying cool out there.
Not out there. We're staying cool in the AC.
There you go. Yeah, definitely a good idea to stay inside, that's for sure.
Oh my awesome. Gosh, yes.
Yeah, well, thanks for your time. Glad that you're here. And we'll just kind of get started. If you don't mind, you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a board-certified ER physician, practiced for 16 years in a variety of different settings. I was in academia, I was doctor. I was working in a freestanding ERs. I did a combination. I was a private practice. I was part of a corporate medical group. So I really floated around. And with my years, really the career just wore on me. It just was like the stress, it really just ate away at my soul, if you can say that. I mean, yeah. I remember a shift where I was alone, no scribe, no mid-level, and I was taking care of two stroke patients at the same time. I was trying to decide who's going for their CT. I was taking care of an asthmatic and severe respiratory distress and a heart attack. The waiting room was packed. Every single room was full. The patients were standing in the hallway like, when is the doctor coming? When is the doctor coming? And the ambulances just kept rolling in. And one of the nurses handed me an EKG of someone in the waiting room, and it was a heart attack. And I'm like, oh my God. Like the stress was just so much, you know, all of it is that happening at the same time. And I just looked up at the clock and I said, when's my relief coming? 8 hours, eight more hours. So I did what I do. You buckle down. I took care of every single person. No one died, thank God. Take care of everybody, ran around, but at the expense of my own health. I didn't sit. I didn't drink. I didn't eat. I came home. I was exhausted. I collapsed on the bed. still wearing my scrubs. My kids, after 10, 11 hours, came, hey, can we go to the park? Can we do this? And I just had no energy. And I was like, is this it? Is this what it's about? Like, after all of those years, is this what you've made it means? The hospital administrators had cut our physician hours. They had cut all our help. And they were just trying to increase their bottom line. And they made sure to let me know that I was replaceable if the situation or if my metrics, my productivity wasn't up to their standards. And I just was like, okay, I'm replaceable. They don't value me. What am I doing here? Is this it? Like, this is my life now? And I said, well, what else can I do? I don't know anything else. Mm-hmm. I've spent my entire life trying to be a doctor. I spent my entire adulthood or early adulthood trying to get into medical school, then becoming a doctor and then becoming an emergency room doctor. And it was like, that's all I had known. And luckily, we had a friend that told us about syndications. He didn't say the word syndication, but he said to me, yeah, I own a piece of 100 7-Elevens. And I'm like, you own a piece? Like, what does that mean? It's like, yeah, I make passive income. I don't do anything. I just own it. And I'm like, that sounds highly suspicious. Like, I don't believe that. There's no such thing as passive income. I don't know what he's saying. Yeah. My husband and I were like, well, what's the alternative? We could keep socking away in the stock market, but every headline in the newspaper, the stock market would go down, the stock market would go up, down, up, down. And in order to get enough money, I would have to be working till 65. And I was like, I don't know if I can make it to 65. So what are our alternatives? Well, let's just try it. We'll start small. So we dipped our toe in the water and we bought into a syndication for a triple net lease. And within 6 weeks, they refinanced and gave us back our investment. And wow. We still owned it. So I was like, whoa, that's weird. Wait, I still own this? I have my money back. This is weird. Like, I like it, but I don't know what this is. So let's try it again. And then, so we just kept trying to find new opportunities and we did it over 30 times in different asset classes. So we started investing in retail centers, industrial warehouse, self-storage, apartments, RV parks, mobile home, assisted living. So we really just jumped all in and we're just doing it. And really 8 months into the pandemic, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be an ER doctor. And we looked at our finances and we had been investing since 2014 in these. And I was able to say, you know what? We have enough income that I can step away and I have choices. So I left medicine in 2020. I'm really fortunate that I was able to start a company now that helps other doctors do the exact same thing I did, create passive income through incredible tax advantaged opportunities within real estate.
Wow. So that's an amazing story. And thanks for being so candid and open with sharing that. I know a lot of people listening to this, including myself, have had those moments where you just feel incredibly overwhelmed with the amount of patient care responsibilities and administrative responsibilities and everything else. And I mean, honestly, I was just anxious thinking about that situation that you were in. I can't imagine actually being
that
the
one. That was every day. That was every day.
So. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think sometimes healthcare administrators and so forth think that we're superhuman and we're not. And there's nobody that's not going to get burnt out in that situation. And then that's going to translate to worse healthcare outcomes for patients. And it's just tough. And then difficulty for them to retain and keep good providers like yourself employed with them, because why stay? And so without getting on too much of a tangent, I'm really scared and worried about what healthcare is going to look like in America in the next few years with just
I'm very scared too.
Yeah.
In my 60s, there's going to be no physicians to take care of us.
Yeah.
This is a big problem that is, I don't think it's talked about enough, but there is a massive crisis coming.
Yep. I completely agree. And my wife would say it's talked about plenty in the Shiloh household, because pretty much every night I go on a rant about it, but I think it's hard. I think that physicians really understand the crisis that's coming and looming, but the folks that are making decisions for us don't really understand it. And yeah, it's scary. I feel the same way. I think about my family and my grandparents and all those folks that are going to have a really hard time getting the care that they need in a timely manner. So yeah, gosh. Well, I'm happy to hear that you had choices and that you were able to figure out how you could leverage real estate to practice medicine how you want to or to leave medicine. And that's fantastic. I also wonder if your friend who owned a piece of the 100 7-Elevens gets free Slurpees every day, because that would be really cool.
I know that on Slurpee Day he does.
Yeah, exactly. How many 7-Elevens does it take to get free Slurpees whenever you want? That's really cool. Well, so 30 different syndications and a bunch of different asset classes. What was your favorite asset class that you invested in? Or is there one in particular that you guys tend to focus on now?
Yeah, so we actually really started niching down on apartments. I felt like I was trying to mitigate as much risk as possible. And what do people need? Housing. Housing is a basic human need. If you're shopping, you're not going a lot of times into the retail centers. You're shopping online from your house. If you are working remote, you're not going into the offices. You're working from your house. So housing is a major need. So where there's need, I want to be able to supply, right? And so we started looking at apartments because of that. So because there are so many other aspects to apartments that we really liked, such as the ability for economies of scale, the ability to get a lot of tax advantages compared, you can get a lot more depreciation in multifamily or apartments than you can, for example, in a self-storage unit, because a lot of that depreciation is component-based. When is the component going to fail? And in apartments, there's 200 kitchens and 200 bathrooms and 200 carpets. And so there's a lot more tax advantages. So the demand, the need, I felt like there's an affordability gap between people that can afford a house and want a house. And there's a huge gap there. So they're going to be renters. So I felt like, again, there's that need. There's those tax advantages. You can do economies of scale. And so we kind of jumped all in into apartments, and we've acquired 7 apartment complexes as of right now. Wow. We have around 1,400 doors and around $183 million of assets under management. We are at this point, though, starting to expand, because you know what? You start how to do it. And then just like we did with our other syndications, now we're looking at other opportunities. We're looking at build to rent. We're looking at townhomes. We're looking at triple net leases and development for different things like a boat, RV storage, just really kind of getting out of our box and expanding. That's what's really cool about real estate, is that once you learn the basics, you can really jump into so many different things, and it's really fun.
Yeah, that's so cool and incredibly impressive. Are you guys predominantly buying apartments in one location, or are you buying all over the United States?
So we are looking at the Sun Belt states. Currently, we have an apartment complex in Houston, 2 in Fort Worth, 2 in Dallas, 1 in Wichita, Kansas, and 1 in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
So we are diversified in multiple states. Each one is its own, and it has its own positives and its own negatives and its own submarket and its own. So it's been really fun to follow along and say, well, learning about the different submarkets and what's going on in each like epicenter of our apartment complex. So it's been really fun.
That's cool. Who is working in your business, or how have you guys been able to scale this quickly? I'm sure you have a pretty awesome team.
Yeah. So what we do is we partner with other syndicators. Oh. So when we're going after a property, we will form a team. So someone's going to be doing the asset management. Someone's going to be dealing with the bank. Someone's going to be reviewing financials. Someone's going to be creating the team. Someone's going to be doing the underwriting. So we create a team and we split up the work. Now you could do it that way, or you could have a firm that everyone is an employee of that firm. We are right now decided to partner with people like us that are family owned, that are mission driven, and not some corporation with a huge overhead, but someone that other companies like us that can manage, have the experience, have the track record, and can really blow out these investments out of the water.
That's awesome. Are you predominantly looking for like class A or B or C or value add, or what's kind of your guys' buy box?
So we're doing class B properties, usually 80s and 90s. They have minimal deferred maintenance. They are value add. So we're going in and we're renovating the kitchens and we're adding backsplashes and we're adding private yards and carports. And so each property is completely different what we do to it, but it's very kind of cookie cutter in the sense of it's these class B properties that they're in a good location and they're not like totally run down. Our business model is not, you know, to take Section 8 housing or anything like that. But there's some people that that is their business model and they do great. But we go for Class B recession-resistant houses or housing.
Fantastic. Where do you see the future? If you had a crystal ball, where do you see the future of multifamily going? There's a lot of talks and discussion about a lot of opportunity in the future and a lot of bridge debt that's coming due. And of course, this higher interest rate environment has made things a little bit trickier. So if you could, where would you say the opportunities are in the future? And where do you see that multifamily is going in the future?
Yeah. So real estate is cyclical, as are interest rates.
Yeah.
Right now, we are in a tough situation. So there's going to be a lot of syndications and operators that their loan is going to become due and the bank's not going to let them do an extension. So a lot of times with this bridge debt, you buy 3 years and then you do a 1 year extension times two. But you have to meet certain criteria. Your debt service rate, the coverage has to be the correct ratio. And there, a lot of the banks are going to say no. There's going to be all these distressed sellers that are going to do fire sales. Has that happened yet? No, I don't see it in Dallas. There is a little bit of activity, but really a lot of people are just waiting. They're not really, I don't see a lot of distressed sellers putting anything on, but I am expecting it. I'm waiting. We're ready to jump in. We've already have teams that we've gathered up our team, like who's going to attack these deals that are going to be coming on the market so we can come up and swoop them up. But I do think that that's coming probably at the end of this year, early next year. And it's a tough market, but I think that, again, real estate is cyclical and it's going to get better. And there's, again, always going to be a need for housing. There's risk now that wasn't there before because there's a lot of talk about national rent control and the government stepping in. There's different states, like in Colorado, I'm not sure if you're aware, but the state wants to purchase, be the first to have the right of first refusal to purchase anything that has five or more units.
Really? Or that at all?
Yeah. So that passed the House and the Senate. I don't know if the governor vetoed it or not, but I know that there was a lot of uproar with apartment owners because what's going to happen? What, the government's going to buy their property?
Just and print money.
And then they can take 12 months to assess if they want to buy it or not. So there was going to be a lot of stress, like you take 11 months and then you say, never mind, I'm not going to buy it. Meanwhile, your loan is expired.
Wow.
So it can be very, very stressful and it'll be interesting to see how that gets navigated.
Yeah, well, hopefully that doesn't happen. And in the government world, 11 months is like 3 years. So before anything gets done. So gosh, yeah, that's interesting. I'll definitely have to read up on that and see what's going on with that in the future. We don't invest very heavily in multifamily right now or at all. We're really focused on assisted living and some short-term rentals and a couple other asset classes, but assisted living being the big one. But yeah, it's really interesting kind of how this whole thing is playing out. And I like when you said it's cyclical because I completely agree. I think over the last few years, anybody could, there's a lot of money available in the market to invest and anyone could have bought a property and made money on it. And so it's really encouraging for me to talk with people like yourself that have a ton of experience and have experienced different markets and realize the importance of like, hey, has the operator navigated a difficult market or even failed? I think that's important to know of like, hey, how have you failed in a syndication? Because a lot of folks just have had tons of appreciation and done really well and made lots of money. And now things are a lot harder and the underwriting is a lot more important.
As how you're operating it, how closely you're watching expenses.
Right.
But really, you know, when I'm looking to invest with people, if they failed, that's a good thing. Because I want to say, what did you learn from that? What did you learn from that? If they didn't learn anything, like, oh, I'm not doing the apartments anymore. Obviously, like, that's not who I want to invest with. But people that have those notches on their belt, like those wrinkles of worry, those are the ones that have been through the ringer, and they're not going to repeat those same things that they went through. Yeah. So I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. What else do you think is important if a doc's listening to this and they're thinking, hey, I want to invest in a syndication? What other points would you have or things that you would tell them to look out for or look for in a deal?
So I have a whole video on how to vet a syndication deal if you want to check out my YouTube channel at Shalwin Properties.
Absolutely.
But I would say you want to look at the market. You want to look at the sub-market as well. Mm-hmm. What's the 1 mile radius of the income, the average and median household income? Because you can have a class A property surrounded by people that make $30,000. And a lot of times when they're going through the RMAs, they're showing 3 mile radius. Even the brokers, whoa, this is such a great deal. They're trying to sell you the property, right? Yeah. And it's a 3 mile radius. And it's like, well, what's the 1 mile? And you start looking at it and it's like, well, the people, it might be a beautiful property and it's class A and it was just built and whatever. But if it's surrounded by government housing, I don't want to do it, right? I'm sure maybe it'll gentrify and improve with time, but that's not where I want to jump in to. So you really want to make sure that you're looking into that because that's a risk. And if you trust the operator, you can say, hey, this is a risk. How are you going to mitigate it? Like, how are you going to deal with this risk? And you can start like interviewing the sponsor and see what they say. I also look at, again, experience and not just like, what's your track record? Because so how do you perform in the headwinds? How do you perform when things are tough? And I'll just honestly, like over the last couple of years with this turn in the economy, I've learned a lot about different people. They operate. And it's made me very hesitant to go with certain investors. Like there's certain people and I'm just like, now I know, like I'm not going to be investing with you anymore. You want an operator that's so dedicated that they'll fall on the sword to protect your money.
Yes,
you don't want someone to say, you know what, like, you know, this isn't that much money for me and we're just going to cut our losses and we're going to sell. Or you don't want someone that doesn't communicate, like what's going on with the property? Is there going to be a capital call? What's the debt? And no one's responding to emails or they take 3 days to respond to your email. Like that's not okay. So you want to try to see how they're communicating. Obviously, when they're trying to raise money, they're going to communicate a little bit differently than how they act after. So even talking to people that have invested with them in the past.
Yeah, I think as forthcoming as they are, if they're willing to give you information, that's of course a really good sign as well. And I also like the Starbucks rule or the Chick-fil-A rule of like, hey, if there's a Starbucks on the corner, Starbucks did their research, so that's good information to know as well, and probably a better location too. Same with Chick-fil-A, so I like those as well. You know, I think location is incredibly important in communication, and I have a friend who invested in a syndication that unfortunately didn't work out well, and they were trying to do multiple capital calls, but not explaining why and what was going on, and she was very frustrated, and unfortunately for her, she ended up losing out on six figures, and you know, it's devastating, but she's learned so much through it. And after we talked about it, I was like, well, would you ever do a syndication again? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. Because now I know what to look out for and know who a good investor or sorry, who a good operator is. And so I think it's really important to take some time and do your due diligence and find exceptional people. Yeah. So thanks for sharing that. What horror stories, if any, do you guys have from tenants? Are you guys doing any of the property management or is that all on-site property management?
Yeah, we are doing the asset management, but we still have our horror stories. I mean, we had our tenants threw the pool furniture into the pool. I don't know why. Like the maintenance people came and everything was in the pool. So it's interesting, the different demographics. It's like, hey, like, why did you do that? But hey, we have had tenants that refuse to leave. They refuse to pay rent. They say that they're too poor to move out. So there's a lot of horror stories, especially in this field. I'm lucky that I don't have, like, a lot of my mentors have told me even worse stories where they'd be, you know, they've found bodies in the dumpster and things like that. We're not investing in those type of demographics, but there's definitely horror stories of, like, what people do to the apartments. Yeah. Like, here's a good story. Here's a good story. We did a water savings program where we came in and we changed out all the toilets and the shower heads to be water efficient. And the company went in there to do an assessment, and they sent us some pictures of what a tenant was doing. They had set up strings to make the toilet continuously flush, like nonstop, just run.
Why?
So they were like, what do you want us to do with it? So I'm like, that is the strangest. That's crazy, right? So yeah, because this is why a lot of people are like, I don't want to be a landlord. You know, I don't want to deal with tenants that are crazy and toilets. And and this is why syndications are great, because you're not having to deal with any of that. We are.
Yeah, exactly.
Even us, we're just the asset managers. We're not dealing with it directly. Like, I'm not pulling that pool furniture out of the pool or cutting that string. I'm just like hearing the stories.
Was the pool furniture at the Vegas apartment?
No, it was in Dallas. I know. They weren't drunk.
What's been your favorite market? If you had to pick one, what would you say your favorite's been?
Honestly, I'm very surprised, but my Wichita, Kansas apartment complex has been wonderful.
Really?
It's just exactly kind of what I was always wanting, like workforce housing. But these are normal people that are hardworking. They want a nice place to live. They want a community feel. That's kind of what I feel like. They're not trying to take advantage of the system. They're just want a nice place to live. And we get to provide that. So I really have enjoyed that market. We took over that property in January, and the rents were severely under market. And we raised the rent. So a lot of people moved out, and we were like, oh my gosh, are we going to be able to rent it?
Yeah.
You know, we dropped all the way down into the 70s, but we're back up to the 90s. It's because people want to live there, you know, and that's the business plan, right? You want to get the people that aren't paying out so you can renovate those units, so you can raise those rents. So, but when it does go down, you get kind of like in a roller coaster, like, is it going to be okay? And this one really landed beautifully.
I see.
And I'm really enjoying that market.
That's great. I've heard good things about Wichita and some of those other markets out in that direction. Kansas City, of course, got a whole lot of publicity as well. Very cool. Where do you guys think you're going to head next? Or is there any markets you got on your radar?
You know, because we live in Dallas, we always focus on Dallas. We know these submarkets like inside and out, and it's very helpful to be able to go to the property. So we're always looking in the DFW area. There's so many people moving here. It's very diverse economy. There's so many submarkets. So we're looking mostly right now, we're staying in this area.
Very cool. Well, let's pivot a little bit, if you don't mind. I know you wrote a book, and I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. What was that process like?
Yeah, I got to co-author a book with about 30 other people. It was an incredible process. It's called Next Level Your Life.
Cool.
And everyone shared their amazing stories about what steps they took. What did they go through to make that pivot, really a mindset change? And then just how did they get to the next level? And it's been incredible working with all those authors and really getting to share my story. There's not a lot of physicians in the space that can talk about burnout and just how we just feel just like we have no options. And really being able to share my story, I'm just really grateful for it, because when people see that if I could do it, they can do it. You know, I think that's important.
That's really inspiring. Was there a theme or a couple of themes that you noticed amongst all the authors that contributed to the book, Next Level Your Life?
Some sort of crisis or hardship or something that was like a pivotal moment in time. And really, that's how we grow. When we're comfortable, there's no growth. You're just going to go along, and only when life happens, and life happens for you, not to you. Yeah. So all of the challenges that we have, they make us who we are. And sometimes we're hyper aware of before and after. And I think that this book really jumps into that significant shift for all of those authors. Like, what was the before and after, and what made you change? Because, you know, there's a lot of times where you go through some stuff and really, like, you just try what you was always worked for you, and you try what's always worked for you. And only when you are, you have no choice but to change completely, only then does you come out of your cocoon and you come out and you're a butterfly, right? You're a different person. And a lot of these stories share those experiences, and they're really incredible.
That's fantastic. Yeah, looking forward to reading it. It sounds like a great book. Yeah, I think mindset is just such an important thing that is talked about a lot. And there's a lot of folks who have a lot of different thoughts about mindset. And so I think it can be hard to find, like, okay, what's a mindset or someone that I can really relate to? So it sounds like that's a really cool book and a cool opportunity to hear 30 different people's perspective, how they suffered this crisis or difficult thing in their life that then was transformative. And I'm in no way as successful as you are, but I look back just over the last couple of years and how much growth I've had and how much we've learned about real estate and investing and networking and meeting all these amazing people. And it's a game changer, but you just have to get started. And for me, it took a long time of listening to Bigger Pockets and analysis paralysis and everything else to, like, finally make the leap. And now I look back, I was like, gosh, that was so silly. Why didn't I start buying real estate sooner, or buying more property sooner, or reaching out to more people and networking with more people? So if you're listening to this right now, the biggest thing is just that mindset shift, and getting started in networking with like-minded people is really important.
Absolutely. You know, it's all about educating is a small part of it. You educate yourself, but you have to take action.
Yeah.
And the only way you're going to take action is when you're surrounded with people that have already done it.
Right.
Because then it's, like, going to push you and to be like them. So, I mean, you want to surround yourself with eagles so you can learn how to fly.
Yeah, completely agree. Sometimes we surround ourselves with the chickens or the turkeys, but the eagles are the ones to go after. That's for sure. Very cool. Do you have any networking tips or tricks for someone who's like, hey, I'm just really scared to get started or reach out to someone because maybe they're a little bit further along than me, but they're not going to be willing to help? Any tips or tricks for that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I am an introvert. And the networking, I used to be like, oh my God, I can't talk to people. Yeah. But really, people just like to talk about themselves. So if you go in and you start asking them questions about them, what's your journey been like? What are you working on? Tell me about your whatever. You'll be successful. And when I say, like, going to these networking events can be overwhelming, you can just tell yourself, I'm going to meet 5 people. I'm going to go out and I'm going to introduce myself to 5 people. I'm going to do these set of questions. And then if you want, after 5, you go home. Like, if it's too scary, or you can enjoy yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to challenge myself and meet as many people as I can and talk to as many people as I can. And eventually it just becomes second nature. But I do remember how stressful it was, like, and how exhausting it was to go to these networking events, like, oh my gosh. And talking to people, but really it just becomes easier and easier as you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have imposter syndrome when it comes to networking as well. At least I know I do. But I've never regretted going to a meetup, and it's just unbelievable the different connections that you can make. And, you know, there's tons of great local meetups too, pretty much everywhere. So it doesn't have to be something crazy like a huge conference. It can just be going to a brewery and learning with 10 to 15 other people. Some of those conversations can be life-changing. So I think it's really important to get out there. Well, that's awesome. Well, you know, what would you say to the ER doctor right now who's listening to this, managing all these patients? Well, probably not managing all these patients because they're listening to this, but what would you say to the one who's driving home after they had another crazy shift like you did? What would you say to them if you had a little bit of advice for them listening to this podcast?
I would say, imagine a day when you can work if you want to work, or cut back if you want to cut back. imagine a day where your spouse can tell you like, oh my God, you look so much more relaxed, less stressful, like less stressed. Your shoulders are kind of lower and there's less tension. Imagine a day when you have that freedom. And that's really what real estate investing can do for you. It gives you that space to breathe and not have the financial stress on top of it. And really, the sooner you start, the better, the easier it gets and the faster you get there.
Yeah. Wow. Perfect answer. We could end the podcast right now for sure. And that would be the best way to end it. One last question I had for you. Do you regret getting out of medicine or do you miss it? Or has it been just such a game changer for you, like it sounds, in terms of just overall mental health and lifestyle change for you, that you don't regret it at all?
Yeah, I don't regret it. I had 16 wonderful years. I've helped so many people with their health. And you know what? Now, this new chapter in my life, I get to help people with their finances, which is just as important. And I still get to do medical stuff if I want. I'm going to Zambia in September on a medical mission trip. So that's awesome. Still get to do, you know, once you're a physician, you're always a physician. And once you are someone that helps people, you're going to find ways to help people and find fulfillment. And I'm not missing it because I'm getting fulfillment in so many other aspects of my life at this point.
Yeah, you've created that freedom to practice medicine how you want to, when you want to, where you want to. In Zambia, that sounds amazing. I did a 6-week long medical mission trip to Zimbabwe and it was life changing. Yeah, amazing. Wow. If you guys can get to Victoria Falls, which hopefully you are going to Zambia, it was unbelievable. And then just the joy that these patients had. I mean, we were in this small hospital and folks were walking for days just to get to this hospital and clinic. And they were sleeping outside the clinic doors. We were seeing as many people as we could, but they're like, hey, you have to have boundaries. So you're going to see, you can see patients from 8 to 4, I think it was, or 8 to 5. And then we're closing the doors. And the patients would just sleep outside and wait their turn. Nobody was ever angry. Everybody was so appreciative. We were able to provide really good care. And we didn't have any number that we needed to see. We got to see as many patients as we wanted to for as long as we wanted to. And it was just a really cool opportunity and just a lot different than we have here. You know, I think that for me, it was so beneficial to just see how the folks there in Zimbabwe were so materially poor, but relationally so rich. And how much happier they were, honestly, than we are here in America with how little that they have and the struggles. I don't know about you, but I never had to like fight a crocodile on my way to work or dodge all these poisonous snakes, you know, or sleeping on the dirt floor, you know. And so it just really puts things into perspective how well we have things here. And it was life changing. I mean, that's one reason I invest in real estate too, is ultimately, I want to have that freedom to get back to Africa if I want to, or go do medical missions somewhere else and not be stressed financially. So really cool. I'm really excited for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be amazing.
That's awesome. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time. Is there anything that you wanted to touch on before we wrap things up?
If anybody wants to get in touch with me, you can email me at Ronnie, R-O-N-N-I-E, at shalwinproperties.com. And you can follow me on YouTube. I have a channel where I do videos explaining different things about syndications. My channel is at Shalwin Properties. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. So follow me. I try to educate as much as I can. And it's just been just such a fun journey.
So yeah, we'll be sure to put all the links to those in the show notes. So be sure to reach out to Ronnie. She's incredible. This is a great time. Thank you so much for coming on. And we'll go ahead and wrap things up. So with that, it's been Dr. Shalev and Dr. Shalev with the Physicians and Properties Podcast signing off.
Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance and talk to you on the next episode.
Please note that information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.